This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and welcome to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture with me, Lim Soo Ann. If you were asked to name a women's rights organization in Malaysia, I'm sure many of you could name one or more off the top of your head. Now, women's rights organizations have long played a vital role, both in the community as well as in pushing for legislative changes to better recognize and protect women's rights here in Malaysia. But just how important is their role and what are the gaps that these organizations are filling? So joining me for today's discussion, this International Women's Day, are Rosanna Issa, Executive Director of Sisters in Islam, and Angie Garrett, Vice President of Sarawak Women for Women Society. Now, both Sisters in Islam and Sarawak Women for Women Society are also part of the Joint Action Group for Gender Equality, and that is a coalition of civil society organizations working towards gender equality here in Malaysia. Thank you both so much for joining me today.
Thank you for calling us.
Yeah, thank you for inviting us to be here.
It is my pleasure to speak to both of you in conjunction with International Women's Day, but also really any day would have been a pleasure regardless. But, you know, I think let's just start to get to know both your organizations better. You know, I'll start with you, Rosanna. I think many of our listeners, especially in Klang Valley, would be quite familiar with Sisters in Islam. But could you just remind us what you do and I guess the issues that Sisters in Islam often focuses on?
Right. Okay. So Sisters in Islam has been around for more than 30 years as an organization. And the focus of our work is really about advancing the rights of women in the Muslim family. But having said that, because we live in, you know, a multi-diversity, multicultural, multi-religious context, so ultimately, you know, the rights of women overall are our concern, not just about Muslim women. And so this is where, you know, the work that we do in collaboration and being a part of the Joint Action Group for Gender Equality is actually very important and critical. Mm-hmm. In terms of the work that what we do at the organizational level, so we have a legal helpline called Telenisa. And we provide, through Telenisa, we provide legal advice and services to women and men as well about their rights under the Islamic family law and other related Sharia laws, you know, affecting Muslims in Malaysia. Then on top of that, of course, like with, you know, with other groups in JAG, you know, we are involved in the advocacy of, you know, reform of laws and policies to make things better for, you know, women in Malaysia overall. We also are heavily involved in, you know, providing information and knowledge and that platform for discussion, you know, about mm-hmm. current issues affecting Islam, gender and women's rights. And we also at the moment, you know, are heavily into content building because there's so much that is required, you know, for women to know about their rights. And the discourse on Islam, gender and women's rights is particularly quite focused. So this is where we build up content on that to put up on social media and online. And finally, together with Jack, also, of course, you know, we are involved in the engagement of national, regional, as well as international mechanisms, holding the government to accountability for its commitments towards women's rights, you know, whatever conventions and instruments that they have ratified.
So as an organization that does quite a lot and work on the rights of women under Sharia law, under Islamic law, I guess what are the challenges that you face there or the nuances that you have to navigate when it comes to highlighting women's rights, protecting women's rights, especially in a society that is still largely quite conservative?
I think with social media, you know, and having to undergo the pandemic, that has actually forced us to go online even more than we've ever had to before. And so in a way, that has given us the opportunity to overcome whatever technological challenges that we've had to meet with the audience. But having said that, nothing replaces face-to-face engagement, lah, you know. Mm-hmm. That is still very much more valuable. And that's where the challenge is, because we can't go out and meet with women as much as we could, you know, in the past. Then, ultimately, it is also about having to deal with religious authorities, because of the challenge that we have with the CIS, with the fatwa against CIS. You know, that also has repercussions in terms of the extent of having to always deal with the issue of perception management, of, you know, what CIS is and who CIS is, and what is it that we do. Because the reality is that, you know, people will always put up, you know, this is the problem with CIS. Instead of looking at, you know, but this is also what CIS provides, you know. And I'm open, you know, to engaging about CIS, really. You know, I think, you know, it's fair enough that, you know, we're having to deal with, you know, the different kinds of perception management out there. And it doesn't help that, you know, the perception management can only be addressed in certain ways and certain manners because of issues of resources. But I'm always, you know, I want to emphasize that our doors are always opened. If people want to know, if you have any hesitation about what CIS does, and if there are questions about, you know, anything that has to do with the fatwa, anything that, you know, you feel that would, you know, you just want to know who we are and what is it that we do, I'm really open to, you know, just contact us, you know, our details are on our website and on social media. Just come and get to know us, and we are more than happy to explain to you about who we are and what we do.
Mm. I think that's always a common thread that I hear from a lot of women's rights organizations. You know, there's always that openness to talk about what you do, right? And yes. And I guess moving on to you, Angie, over at Sarawak Women for Women Society, tell us more about what issues you focus on. I know you're also part of JAG, the Joint Action Group for Gender Equality, but looking at a more local level, right? What are the issues, or what are the priorities for Sarawak Women for Women Society?
It's what Rosanna was saying just now, we are also part of JAG. And most of the issues that JAG are dealing with, we are part of it because we used to rectify with them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we endorse, yeah, whatever bill they're passing. Like now, the recently is the bill on sexual harassment. Mm-hmm. And our main focus here is more on domestic violence. Yeah, when we started way back in 1995, I think we are the only organization in Sarawak that focus on women issues and also children. So at first, our main agenda is more on like rape, yeah, how we help the rape survivors and all that. Then gradually we move on to domestic violence, and we help for the law reform on AIC. Yeah, we are also part of it. We also deal with like child sexual abuse. And because of that, we have what we call it the Child Personal Safety Program, which we did before the PKP, or MCO. We did the roadshow throughout Sarawak on that program, whereby we are calling for teachers, teaching primary one, to train them how to recognize, you know, child abuse. So that is part of it. Yeah, that is one. Yeah. And secondly, also we are doing now, we have the new project that we are on since 2019, is what we call it, Bukan Salah Kami. It's not my fault, whereby we are trying to give awareness to the public, you know, when there is sexual harassment, it's not the fault of the victims, yeah? That means it's not our fault, because it's not... it is not our consent, yeah, to do when we are the victim. So we are giving chance for those survivors, yeah, to talk about it, Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we ask them to write their stories, you know, and then to share out with us. And also, apart from that, we also have what we call during the MCO for the 2 years, mm-hmm. you know, most people, you see, you go to the rural folk, you go to the kampongs, and they're giving them food and all that. But we are thinking more on the women issues. What are the things, or what are the needs of the woman out there, which people overlook? So that is, we are thinking that is a sanitary pad. And we have a lot, so we are asking the public, you know, to give donations on that. And until now, we're still doing it. Yeah, so this is the new project that we have now. Apart from our main focus before that is on domestic violence, yeah, child abuse and all that. Mm. And of course, while doing it, of course, we have a lot of what do you call it, challenges. Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially when we are dealing with our public awareness program. Yeah, we have like the funding and also the speakers, you know, and then of the language barriers. Mm. Yeah, like if we go to the rural areas, for instance, yeah, we have problem in terms of speakers that speak their language, mm-hmm. you know, because like Sarawak, we have many ethnic groups and we have very limited local speaking, like most of us speak English here. Mm-hmm. So of course, like the Iban, the BM, we can have it, but even like the local other dialects, we have a problem. Yeah, and the same thing with like handling our, we also have like crisis online. Mm-hmm. Crisis online whereby the women can always call us, yeah, and then we are there, you know, to lend their learning, you know, to listen to their to whatever problem they have. We call it now, we call it as a Winnie. Yeah, Winnie is a woman empowerment, yeah, in need. So of course we have trained para counselors, we call it lah, yeah. But again, you see some callers, you know, those who happen to be on duty, they're English speaking, but the client who call in, they might speak their own dialect. So again, that is the challenges that we have. So sometimes we have to, you know, sometimes when we, okay, we refer this caller to the next person, sometimes the caller won't call back, you know. Mm. You see, so it stopped there. Yeah, so these are the, yeah, for the crisis online, these are the things that I feel that are quite challenging for us, like, yeah, because in sometimes the resources too.
All right, we'll go for a quick break and continue our discussion right after this. So my guests today are Rosanna Issa, Executive Director of Sisters in Islam, and Angie Garrett, Vice President of Sarawak Women for Women Society. Keep it here on Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture with me, Lim Soo Ann. It is International Women's Day today, and we are exploring the role and importance of women's rights organizations, be it at the community level or at the policymaking level. And doing that with me are Rosanna Issa from Sisters in Islam and Angie Garrett from Sarawak Women for Women Society. Now, before the break, both Rosanna and Angie were sharing about the work and the issues that their respective organizations focus on. And now, I guess, you know, stepping back, looking at the bigger picture, Rosanna, what are the gaps that women's rights organizations are filling in Malaysia? How important are their roles?
Definitely, in terms of the biggest gap, you know, if you think about it historically, was on the issue of just having a space for women to come to. Mm. And talk about their issues in a way that would actually move the issue forward. So, for example, you know, like the establishment of women's aid organization and the shelter, right? Mm-hmm. More than 30 years ago, or is it almost 40 years ago? This was really a need, because domestic violence was going on, but the women had nowhere to go. And it was the late Tan Siew Sin was the one who established the shelter together with, I think, the Pro Tem Committee of Women's Aid Organization. And so this is where, you know, it's kind of like NGOs are actually the first, you know, on any issue to fill up a gap where, you know, there aren't any services that the government is providing. So right now, you know, okay, yes, we have government shelters. Even then, I don't know to what extent. I don't have the numbers. I think perhaps a women's aid organization would be able to allude to all these factors much more than we do. But it still doesn't deny the fact that, for example, you know, remember when we first had the movement control order, and what was the first thing that the Ministry of Women wanted to do was actually to stop the services, the Tarian Kasih services, because of the pandemic. When actually, so this goes to show that, you know, women's NGOs are so aware of the fact that we go into a lockdown, actually the likelihood of domestic violence increasing is very, very high. And so that was why there was that outcry, and that very day itself at 4 p.m. the line was reinstalled again. So it's kind of like, so it's not just about providing the services, but even the whole understanding of the effect of violence, you know, it's being led and driven by the NGOs, not by the government. So that is something that remains till today. Even when you look at the issue of sexual harassment, we haven't got an anti-sexual harassment bill yet. You know, it's been 30 years already that we've been trying to table it. And even then, with all the discussions about giving input into the what kind of laws we should have, just last week there was a campaign calling out, you know, for the bill to be reviewed prior to the second reading, for the bill to be reviewed by the parliamentary special select committee on women and children's affairs and social development, because we're afraid that we might not be getting the bill that we want. So again, it's NGOs that are kind of like putting out all our antennas to say that, you know, hold on, you know, before this goes, we got to make sure that we get the law that is going to be effective for the survivors of sexual harassment. And it's not the government that's doing it. You know, we're the ones that are doing it. So really, I mean, it's not just about, you know, the physical, the policy, the lawmaking, but it's the whole understanding of the issue that, you know, it's women's NGOs that are driving all of this. You know, there's a big gap in the understanding. I'm not quite sure what the issue is. And I think there are certain things that are happening positively. However, you know, the whole crux of the issue surrounding the issue of violence against women still remains to be, you know, missing, you know. So and that's how NGOs are actually filling the gap. Women's rights organizations are filling in the gap.
Hmm. Why is it important for all of these NGOs to work together as a coalition under the Joint Action Group? Both CIS and SWWS are part of 14 organizations under JAG. Why is it important that you work together as a coalition to push women's issues forward rather than, you know, individually?
Because one, our cause is aligned. The way we think about, you know, what we want for women, you know, I think they are aligned. You know, it's very much centered around, you know, the rights-based approach. I think that that's the first common understanding that we have amongst all these women's groups. Secondly, you know, there's just so many issues. And, you know, one organization can't be dealing with all of them. So this is also a way of pooling our resources together and supporting one another. Do you know that, you know, in the past when I used to go overseas and give talks about women's, you know, to talk about women's rights or whatever, I'll never fail to talk about JAG, because I think the JAG coalition is really, really special and something, you know, that not a lot of women's groups around the world have. You know, they may be coordinating in silos or going on its own, like you say, and it's a very lonely thing to do. And we need friends to be, you know, we need to be doing this with friends. And essentially, that's what we are one to, you know, we are to each other. You know, we are friends, you know, in this cause, and we really feel that the more that, you know, women's groups come in, you know, the more understanding that we have in terms of shaping views, then we're going to get a better picture as well in terms of what is it that really needs to be dealt with for women on the ground.
Yeah, I agree with Rosanna, yeah, because say each, you know, NGOs is dealing with one issue and then you're trying to fight and got it through, people will listen, isn't it? Yeah, we need a bigger voice, a louder voice. That is Jack, that is what Jack is doing. That we carry is more wet, you know, rather than individual NGOs, yeah, shouting, people will listen to you, okay? Yeah. Because people have to see, okay, you are doing the issue, who else is supporting you, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so when there are a collection a collective voice is there, I think we have a bigger voice and then a louder voice, and then so that to bark to the parliament there so that something can be done about it. Yeah.
I also want to add that, you know, I mean, maybe we've not thought about it in this way, but actually it's also a way to sustain ourselves. It's a question of sustainability. Like, for example, you know, the issue of, you know, sexual harassment. I mean, so many activists, you know, have come on board, you know, put in their time and effort. And then, you know, it's being continued on by a new generation within the same group as well, you know, within the same organizations and the coalition. And this is really one way of sustaining the issue, because, you know, we're all, you know, things don't happen overnight lah, for women in Malaysia, kan, as we all know.
Yeah. You know, when it's passed, I think it was read twice, I think. And then, but somehow, you know, somehow the NGOs, the one who noticed that in the bill itself, there is something missing. And that's why we asked them to relook at it again.
NGOs are the one, women's rights organizations like yourself are the ones keeping policymakers in check, right? Making sure change is implemented, not just for the sake of it, not just superficially, but you want concrete change that is there to improve women's lives for the better.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, in the words of my mentor, Shanti Dariam, you know, it's not enough that rights are recognized. The rights has to be realized and exercised as well. So this is where the realization and exercising of the rights is really important, even after, you know, we've gotten a certain law and policy in place.
Rosanna, have you encountered any misconceptions from the public about what NGOs can or cannot do? You know, are there other situations where you've encountered where people think that, oh, this falls under your purview, but not necessarily, you know, things that people don't really understand about how women's rights organizations work in Malaysia?
I can't speak for the other women's groups, but I do also find that, you know, like, we have to pick our issues and battles, lah. You know, because there is that understanding, oh, you're an organization dealing with Islam, what, you know, why aren't you addressing, you know, issues about, for example, I think one of the issues that was raised to me personally is why aren't you dealing with, you know, the whole issue of the fires at the Tahfiz, or how the Tahfiz education, you know, is being rolled out in Malaysia. And it's not to say that it's not our issue, but I think, you know, we have to look at the focus of the work that we do, and then, you know, how best do we channel our resources towards addressing it. And the thing with the Tahfiz fires, we also saw actually there was already a lot of public mobilization on it. But having said that, you know, then you come to that question of, you know, okay, who's sustaining this now? You know, so that's a big question, you know. So I think, yeah, there's so much that is expected. And I really do not like disappointing people. But at the same time, I also have to think about the team that we have and what our core area is. And, you know, for us to just figure out what are the outcomes and changes that is realistic for us to achieve. And we'll focus on that. Having said that, we also see that sometimes it's necessary to open at least the space and platform for a certain discourse to take place, you know, and that's something that, you know, we often monitor to look at, you know, how, what are the issues that we need to open up spaces and platforms for. Yeah.
And what about for you, Angie? I guess any common misconceptions or barriers that you face?
Yes, we do, right? When we first started, most people think that they heard Strong Women for Women's Society. They were thinking that we are the feminist group. Oh, that these people, they hate men, you know, things like that. So when we organized things and send letters, you know, to for instance, to the schools, when we do our education outreach, the moment they see the word women for women, they say, oh, only the girls go or only the ladies go. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is, we face that even until now, you know, there are some people that still have misconception on our organization. But then as time goes, you know, because we're able to prove ourselves that we are working, yeah, for women, children, and families. So then they realize it, okay, these are the women, this that is working. For instance, when we do our child personal safety, so that is that means we're not just talking about just women. Yeah, we are sort of dealing with children. When we try to go into the like the schools or even like government departments, sometimes we have a problem. Yeah, getting approval. Sometimes we were ding dong, you know, by the authority. Yeah, because we're NGOs. Yeah, yeah. So that's how they see now, you know, NGOs. But then if we work with the other agencies, like say we collaborate, yeah, with the other government, I think that will make us much easier. Yeah, so I mean the stigma, like when they heard the word NGOs, sometimes they have misconception that all these are the people like anti-government. Yeah, and then they come, and that's where the politics comes in also, like, you know, for play with that. So we really have to push our way, you know, how to find ways and means how to get into the grassroots, especially those our target groups. Yeah.
Mm. Angie, why is it important for women's rights organizations to also work at the grassroots, right? To empower women from the grassroots and provide them with a platform to institute change from the bottom up. Why is that important?
Yes, it's important because we want them to empower themselves. Yeah, so that once they have they are able to empower themselves, meaning that they can be self-sufficient. And of course, like for instance, the rural women, and that's what our program we have, what we call it, empowerment for rural women and girls. We did go to the rural women like in Baram, the central of in Miri. We did that, you know. So we talk to these people about self-assertiveness, you know, talk about, yeah, just the importance of self-confidence, because once they are confident in doing things, I think they are the one push the government, actually. They can push the authority, you know, to look at what they want. And then if possible, what we want is that they are listen, you know, they are listen, because if no one listen to them, no one become their problem. So they have to have their own voice. Yeah. So that's why the grassroots level, they must have that opportunity to voice out their needs, to voice out their problem, and to voice out their legal rights. Yeah. If no one listen to them, who else? Yeah, so this is where like NGOs also comes in, like, yeah, but we have to guide them, you know, what they can do and all that.
People in the community know what their issues are the best, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. Only they know what the best for themselves, not us, you see. Yeah, we might think this is good for them, but are we really sure? Yeah, because we're not in their shoes.
Mm. Rosanna, how much would you say are we relying on women's rights organizations to provide support, to fill in the gaps, you know? And then I guess what does that tell us about then the ability of the system to really protect women's rights and welfare?
That's a very good question, Sue-Ann, because I would say that the reliance on NGO at the moment is quite a lot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, you know, I don't know actually to what extent the government has actually made an assessment of their own services and whether it's sufficient or not for women out there. Because at the end of the day, the difference between the government and NGOs is really the biggest thing is really about resources. Mm-hmm. NGO resources are really very, very small. And sometimes, you know, it can only reach a small group of people when actually the government has at its disposal, you know, much more resources and much more, what do you call this, ability to conduct, you know, coordination and authorization of resources for women to be served better. So I mean the thing that really drove in the, you know, the nail in the coffin was what was how it was the women's groups that had to rise up so much beyond what they could do during the time of the pandemic, during the first MCO. And this already tells you that we are much more in tune to, you know, what women would actually experience. And so the only other thing that we could do is actually to coordinate the communications between the women on the ground and the authorities. So one example that, that Sisters in Islam had to take on this role is with regards to any questions relating to the Sharia courts. You know, women were calling us up to find out, you know, oh, what about my court dates then? You know, I've already got a court date, you know, for this particular hearing. You know, if it's about the issue of divorce, it's one thing, but it's also the issue of having to deal with, you know, visitation rights for their children, hearing for custody, and so on. And what we could only do, because obviously we don't have the authority to decide on all of that. So the only thing that we could do was to channel all these voices to the relevant authorities and make requests to them, like, you know, please give us something so that we can tell the women and assure them that they are, you know, being heard, that, you know, their issues will be resolved, or, you know, if you are, if, even if you're just telling them they need to wait, you know, give assurance of how long is it that they have to wait for, what kind of directions that, you know, you can give to them. And in the meantime, is there anything that, you know, any resources that they can go to, you know, to just figure this out. So all of this, you know, if the, who would the women ask? I mean, I'm sure, yeah, they would call up, for example, the Jabatan Agama, Majlis Agama, and all of that. But, you know, we were the ones, you know, the NGOs were the ones who immediately instituted, for example, our Telenisa line actually operates only 3 days in a week. But when the MCO hit, you know, we made the decision, right, we're operating 5 days in a week, and we're going to open our services from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. And we made sure that the communication goes out there so that women would know how to contact us. You know, all of that was not coming from the authorities, you know. So this is where it's, you know, the reliance on NGOs. Yeah, I think, you know, the preparedness, perhaps also maybe because we're small, we're more agile to be able to move in that way. But having said that, there wasn't much that we could do in terms of their court dates and so on and so forth. That still goes back to the relevant authorities to have to deal with all those kinds of questions and issues.
I guess at the end of the day, there's only so much that all of you can do as NGOs, right? I mean, there's a lot that you can do to help facilitate, to help support. But if there are things that are related to legal matters, to policy, like it ultimately still falls in the hand of government authorities, and there's only so much that we can control there. So I mean, you guys are doing what you can in that limited space.
Yeah, just to channel the voices, you know, to the authorities to say, look, women are asking, you better give them an answer. In our experience at that time, what was good was that we actually got good response from the Sharia Judiciary Department, and they came out with videos. You know, at the very least, there were videos coming out to say, okay, this is what's going to happen, and we helped share that out. So that was one thing that was good in our experience with the Sharia Judiciary Department. Having said that, I think with the other, you know, issues, like maybe with the issue of domestic violence, I think, other NGOs, you know, they also had, you know, their own challenges and experiences, like, because there was just so much, you know, women just couldn't get out of the house in the first place. How do you even deal with that? Yeah.
Mm. Let me ask you this, Angie. Do you think that Malaysia has too many women's rights organizations? I mean, under JAG alone, there are 14. Or is each organization playing a different role when it comes to women's rights?
I think we don't have too many. No, I don't think so. Yeah, because each NGO, we are dealing with different issues. Yeah, so we take up a different issue. For instance, like in Sarawak, yeah, the NGOs that are dealing with focus, yeah, or really focus on women issues and children is Right Women for Women. Though we have many organizations here. Yeah. So, because of the issues that we're taking in, you know, like WAO is more on advocacy and all that. You see, like Rosanna is more focusing on the Islam families and all that. But I think, it's not that many actually, yeah, compared to other countries. Yeah, but we have to see it based on states, lah. All right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think you can have too little NGOs, lah. You know, I think, you know, the more women mobilize and coordinate and organize, actually, the louder our voices will become.
Yes, yes.
Mm. Are you concerned of duplication or overlap, or is that not a issue here?
For me, not an issue at all. I mean, because there's only so much that we can serve, right? So, for example, I know that there are other groups also talking about, you know, rights of women in the Muslim family. And I'm like, great, man. I mean, more of you, the better, you know. People like FAME, you know, I think they're also doing a lot of good work, reaching out to the women and providing support for women on the issue of Muslim family law. And I think, there's so many Muslim women out there. You know what? There better be more support for them, both within the NGOs as well as authorities.
Mm. It's not a competition, right? When it comes to women's rights, it's about lifting each other up.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think so. So, for instance, like us, we work closely with PSA Children. Mm-hmm. We also work closely with WAO because we are, you know, when we need, you know, some advice, especially dealing with domestic violence, especially right now, because we are about to start a shelter, you know, for the domestic violence survivor here. So, WAO is the NGO whereby we can take it as our resources, you know, how to deal with the starting of the shelter. So we feel, I don't feel it's, you know, we are repeating or we are competing one another for the certain, NGOs, yes.
Mm. Let's go for another quick break before we continue our discussion. It is International Women's Day today, and joining me are Rosanna Issa from Sisters in Islam and Angie Garrett from Sarawak Women for Women Society, talking about the role of women's rights organizations in highlighting women's issues and welfare in Malaysia. We'll be right back on Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture with me, Lim Soo Ann. This International Women's Day, I'm joined by Rosanna Issa, the Executive Director of Sisters in Islam, and Angie Garrett, Vice President of Sarawak Women for Women Society, to talk about the importance of women's rights organizations in civil society. Now, both of you have been in this field for many years. You know, how much has the network and landscape of women's rights organizations changed over the years and decades in terms of, you know, the growth of the organizations or even the direction that the movement has taken? Angie?
Yeah, for Sarawak Women for Women, I can see a lot of changes, especially like before, you know, in terms of our members, membership, and now it's grow, and the expertise of our membership also changes. We have, you know, some were specializing, or some are like not only just teachers, you know, that you see, because we're all volunteers actually. We only have like 3 full-time staff. Mm. So the rest are all volunteers, you know. But the great impact they're giving us, that make us a lot of changes is their, you know, during the MCO. Right. Before, we only meet face to face, but the MCO force most of our members, most of our, I think, NGOs, you know, to learn about using the digital platform. You see, like what we are doing right now, okay? Like before meeting, also we meet face-to-face, but now we all go for Zoom. Mm-hmm. So whether you want it or not, they have to learn, you know, the skill, the new technology skills. So I think these changes, we can see, you know, the changes. I think that's how we grow, like, you know. Mm.
I definitely agree with Angie with regards to how we are being forced to adapt to the digital age. Yes. I mean, you know, we kind of like still had a choice prior to the MCO, but you know, with the MCO, memang tak ada choice langsung lah kan. And it's really a far cry from the days when I look at the SIS founding days, when I hear the stories of the SIS founding members when they will have to fax drafts of press statements to one another, you know. So, yeah. You know, I cannot imagine having to organize through fax machines when we're all just doing it from our mobile phones at the moment. So I think that's where the difference, you know, the big difference, I think, is in the way women are able to mobilize and coordinate, because social media does play a big role in giving that platform for, you know, women to come together and raise their voices. And it also allows the voices of, you know, individual persons, you know, because all this while, you know, the voices would be from organizations, but then now you have, you know, much more opportunity for individuals to come out as activists in their own right, you know, in their own name, in their own stand, to push for their own agenda, for what they believe in, and they are able to mobilize without, you know, being under the umbrella of an organization. I think that is something that's pretty special and unique, in the sense that then, you know, you have actually that opportunity to also then how do you figure out the negotiations for those spaces lah. The other thing also I would like to say is in terms of the change is how important it is for women to be part of, you know, decision making. I think, you know, with all each time election comes, all of our groups always harp on, you know, women's representation in, you know, in the candidacy for elections. And it's so interesting looking at this Johor elections, you know, in terms of the composition, you know, to what extent, you know, women are being represented, how many women there are out there, what kind of manifestos are being pushed out by the various coalition, political party coalitions, on women's rights. So I think that there definitely is that awareness that, you know, yeah, more women can actually play a role in decision making. And that space in terms of that, like how are we then as women taking that opportunity to engage and be a part of that decision making processes.
So, Rosanna, in an ideal Malaysia, right, if there is, you know, we see improvements in women's rights, women's issues, what role do you see women's rights NGOs playing? Or what role would you like to see women's rights NGO actually playing compared to what, you know, you're doing now?
It's a very, because I've had to remove myself from thinking in that box of what is ideal. So I'm not able to respond to that ideal situation, because the reality is that the most difficult thing, the biggest challenge and barrier for women's rights groups such as Sisters in Islam to speak on right now is actually you know, that whole area about, you know, freedom of expression. Because this is where all the perception and everything, you know, you're not supposed to speak up, you know, you're not supposed to say anything that has to do with Islam. And it's not about, you know, being able to freely say what we want to say. The point of the work of Sisters in Islam is that it does come from a location of experience of women's lived realities. And also from the whole standpoint of knowledge, you know, we're just not plucking things in the air and putting it out there for people to think about. We're actually grounding our work, you know, in serious scholarship. It's not about, you know, people say, oh, is it like Western scholarship? Well, no, we're actually grounding ourselves in the knowledge of Islamic legal traditions. You know, this is, and so for me, if you ask me what is ideal, then for me, it's like there should be more spaces and platforms, and that whole thing about, you know, just being able to express. So freedom of speech ultimately is the most important thing in, for women to be able to obtain their rights.
Mm. And in conjunction with International Women's Day, what would be your message to our listeners? I'll start with you, Rosanna.
Speak up. You don't like something, speak up. Make yourself heard. And don't let anyone stop you from saying what you think and what you feel.
Angie?
Say no if you feel that it's not right for you. Because now the theme is break the bias. Mm-hmm. So if we feel that you are being discriminated in your service, you're in the workplace, then say so. Say it so that your voice be heard. Yeah, don't leave yourself and keep quiet, you know, just as if you agree, you know, what people, how people treated you. So be assertive in your own way. Yeah.
All right. Thank you both so much for joining me today.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sue Ann.
Thank you for having us.
I've been speaking to Rosanna Issa, Executive Director of Sisters in Islam, and Angie Garrett, Vice President of Sarawak Women for Women Society, on the importance of women's rights organizations in Malaysia. I'm Lim Suan, and this has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.